Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's About Time for True Crime.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, just lovely. Here with my favorite people.
Oh, that's me and you guys. But me.
You and also them and...
Also the cats.
And, yeah, well, of course.
Yeah. And your fiance was around a little bit.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
We exiled him.
Sucker.
We said, get out.
He came in today and I was like, hey, loser. And then he was on the phone with his dad and I was like, well, I'm a dick. So.
It happens.
It is. But to be fair, that is our nickname for each other.
It's
That's
true.
Not just me being a dick.
No, yeah.
For the sake of being a
you
dick.
You guys exclusively call each other loser.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what more do you need, right?
Nothing. That's it. I have my wife who happens to be soon to be his wife. And he's a loser. It's great.
The plot has thickened.
Ooh. But so am I. You have a type.
Oh.
Oh. I'm doing well. It's a whole day. I went for a hike today.
You did?
I did.
Look at you.
I know. It's a Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday.
And I was able to do that, so that's cool. Other than that, though, not much. We just had really yummy fries and shakes. And I'm really excited to hear about today's.
I'm excited to tell you about today's case.
Okay. Well, how have you been for the last week? And then tell me about it.
So this last week has been very busy in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Spent some quality time with family, which is like my favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
Saw some friends, went for a drive. What happened? Did stupid adult things like paid bills and cleaned the house and shit like this. I don't know why I was in such a rush to get here because here I am and it's terrible. But whatever, we live. And researched a lot. I dove into this case.
Ooh.
And the more I looked into this case and the more that I dug into it, the less I felt like I knew.
Mm.
It's one of those where, depending on the source, it seems that the author of each source has something that they believe happened, and so they are supplying the evidence for that.
Got it.
But there's just so much to dispute here that when I thought I knew it, I didn't. And here I am, I don't know it.
Ooh.
So I've tried to put together everything I could find, but like some sources completely omit certain things.
Interesting.
Others describe them in a different way. So there'll be a lot of times where I'm like, some reports say.
Right.
Because it's not this blanket statement across the board.
Well, and that happens so much. Like, something that you guys don't see is all of the cases that Allie and I start and then end up having to stop because either the reporting isn't in-depth enough for a full episode, or there are so many contradictory sources, not even just ones that are leaving things out, that we're like, oh, well, we don't want to spew bullshit.
No, and we don't want to take somebody's opinion that they're reporting as fact and run with that, you know? So we try to look up several sources that can confirm certain things and try to see who's confirming that and why. And if all of those sources cite the same source, it's not like you found five different sources that confirm this. You found five different places that used the same
one.
So yeah. So yeah. It's like you've got to be careful with it. So.
But ooh, okay. I'm so excited.
So skippers, stop skipping.
Yoo-hoo.
Hi, hello, and welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast.
Aw, you guys.
Abby and I look forward every week to get to hang out with you guys in our little corner of the true crime world, so we're just very happy that you're here.
It's so true. Thanks. Bring your little milkshakes, or I guess beverage of choice.
Or snack.
Ooh, yes, love a snack.
Today's case, I will admit, is bizarre.
Okay.
It just is. We had a few requests recently for unsolved cases, and there's a debate as to what to classify this specific case as.
Ooh.
You could argue that it's unsolved. You could argue that the finding is incorrect. We're going to talk about all of that and more today. Sources include many things, but I'll tell you a few of them. The Vancouver Sun, All That's Interesting, The Province Newspaper, Stories of the Unsolved, a Case File episode, podcast episode, and so many more. They're all linked. And I also want to issue a warning. Today's episode includes discussion of suicide, self-harm, psychological torture, animal abuse, sexual assault, and again, so much more.
Holy poop.
So please keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times, because this is an unbelievable ride.
All right.
It really is. So we're going to get to all of it, I assure you, but we're going to start with our focus in the center of our case today.
Okay.
Cindy James.
Cindy James.
So Cindy was born Cynthia Elizabeth Hack on June 12th, 1944 in Oliver, British Columbia, Canada.
Okay.
She grew up in a loving home with both parents and five siblings. She had a seemingly loving and supportive family, although her diary entries speak of physical punishment from her dad, who sort of ruled with an iron fist, if you will, and he was the disciplinarian, but her mom was doting and loving and present and all of those things. And again, we're talking 40s, 50s.
Right.
Does it mean that it's okay? No. But did it mean that it was standard for the time? Was it this unthinkable thing that happened at the time? Likely not. But I guess it depends on the severity of that. So kind of keep that in mind.
Okay.
She wasn't ever really in one place long, though, because her dad was in the military. And so he would get moved from base to base, and the family would get moved base to base too. And so because of this, she kind of had a tough time planting roots.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, some sources would say she had a hard time making friends. Well, was that because she was only somewhere 6 months at a time? And how were you really able to make lasting friendships in middle school?
Right. First 6 months of your seventh grade year.
For, you know, part of the school year when you joined late and left early and all of that. So
yeah.
I give a little bit of slack there. I don't think we can say, oh, well, the reason is because there was something, you know, she was socially awkward or inept or anything.
She had a hard time. It was mostly like, it's difficult to do this thing.
Exactly.
Right.
After graduating high school, Cindy wanted to go to college, or as she would have said, university.
Oh,
because, you know, Canada. Her dad was, amongst other things, sexist, and said that she should stick to a more traditional female role. So if she had wanted to go for like a science or engineering, you know, degree, he said, how about nursing?
He said, have you heard of shorthand?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So he was willing to send her to nursing school and pay for it. And she agreed to go. And this did end up working out.
Damn.
She loved her job. She loved what she did.
Love
she
that.
She actually took such a liking to it that she was very successful in her career later. And we'll talk about it. But while she was in school, she met a man that was many years older than her. His name was Roy Makepeace. He was a South African born doctor. And the two of them immediately hit it off.
Oh, okay.
I have no doubt that at some point you will make a joke about his last name. Yes, it really is. Makepeace, one word.
Oh, the cogs are turning.
Oh, I can see them.
Yeah.
So Abby and her dad jokes, they never cease. Anyway.
They never cease fire? You mean they make peace?
Ma'am.
Sorry. All right. We got one down.
3 minutes in.
We got one. Okay. Eight. But okay. We got one down.
So some reports say that when Roy and Cindy met, Roy was married.
Ooh.
Others don't really comment on it anyway. But either way, Roy was soon either divorced or single or what have you. And the two of them got more serious.
Okay.
After she graduated nursing school in 1966, Cindy and Roy got married. She was 19 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She worked at a treatment center for children with emotional and behavioral trouble, and she loved her job.
Aww.
She even rose to a director position later. I mean, she was good at it. She loved what she did. She was passionate. Also, and I think if you've got passion and drive, you have it all.
That's so impressive for a woman in this time period to not only have risen through the ranks like that, but to literally be directing.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that took her until like the 70s to get to, that's still pretty,
the 80s actually, but yes, we'll talk about it.
But yeah, like, it's still new wave for women in the workforce. That's awesome.
Yeah. And she had her preference. She liked working with children. She had really found her calling in life. And as for her marriage with Roy, it was good in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, you imagine that it would be, right? Because you wouldn't get married if it wasn't good in the beginning. But like a lot of times, it ended up not being so great.
Yeah.
According to her diary entries, he had become physically, emotionally abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd realized that she'd married a man kind of similar to her dad, who she was trying to get away from. But still, she stayed married. And many of the years were good ones. It wasn't all bad. It wasn't all horrible. And I think if it was, she wouldn't have been there.
Right.
Doesn't mean it was healthy. Doesn't mean that it wasn't toxic, but it does mean that she stayed. And in 1982, after 16 years together, they divorced.
Okay.
Neither of them had children from previous relationships. Neither of them, you know, they didn't have kids together. So the split wasn't complicated in the way that like a custody argument might be, but there it still had its issues.
Right.
Oddly enough, they stayed friends, and some sources even say like they double dated together even afterwards. And so
that's wild.
Which sometimes I feel like you can realize you're better off as friends. And mm-hmm. I think that that might have been what was going on. But we'll talk a little more about that later, I promise.
Okay.
So again, they divorced in 1982. They actually divorced in July. And by that fall, Cindy started receiving strange phone calls.
Mm.
So at times, the phone would ring. And when she answered, there would be silence on the other end before the caller hung up. Other times it was creepy noises and like growl whisper sounds, which Ew. Was really kind of freaky and unsettling.
Yeah.
She figured she was being prank called and that the caller would get bored and eventually stop, but they didn't. And it actually got worse.
Oh.
They were calling more often and it was getting more intense. And the calls even became threatening, telling her that she was being watched and she was going to be hurt and she was next.
Oy.
She began receiving threatening, ominous letters, too. Some had words cut out from a magazine that were sort of pasted on, you know, like the stereotypical yeah. pasted on a, like the Zodiac type, right? And it said, "I see you, and soon, Cindy, and you're dead." Which was obviously very unsettling for her. The letters did not appear to have been mailed from somewhere. Like, I couldn't find any... source that said they were postmarked or anything like that. So it seemed to be that they were hand placed in her mailbox almost, yeah. which was even more terrifying because it meant that someone walked up to her home
and did this and then left. Yeah.
Photos of women being choked were left on her property that she would go outside and find. Ooh. Some of them had their eyes X'd out.
Ooh.
So it just sort of, it started with like phone calls that were silent,
but
and then they got worse and then it got threatening and then letters.
Right.
So it's not just I know your phone number, it's I know where you live and I know this and I see you and I'm watching you and I know your name and you're next and you're dead.
Right.
And this really freaky.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. I hate that.
So she reported this to law enforcement when it got to be too much.
Well, good. That's a good first step.
And one of the officers she was put in contact with was a man named Pat McBride. And Officer McBride believed Cindy and he wanted to help.
Okay.
Sources vary on why this happened. Some say that he was moving and needed somewhere to stay between apartments. Others say it was because they were dating. But for a brief period of time, Officer McBride actually lived with Cindy.
Okay.
Again, reports vary. Some say he just rented a room and paid her rent. And it was like October 31st to December 1st. Like for the month of okay. November, he was there. He had recently gone through a breakup and... was moving, and she had recently divorced earlier that year in the summer, right. And so they had that sort of in common. They did date briefly, but I don't think that the moving in
was related
was the reason for that. Yeah. He moved out, and then they stayed together, so it wasn't like they were ready for that in their relationship.
Okay.
I don't think they were exactly in the same bedroom. I think he rented space, but okay. Then the relationship kind of blossomed from there. She was relieved to have him there, though, because she felt more safe. She felt safe that it was just another person. It was safer, she felt, like, to have a man there as sort of a protector. And it was safer to have a police officer there because she felt like he might actually be able to do something. And he was part of the team that was investigating. And so
right.
She's like, well, if someone's going to be able to figure out what's going on here, I'd really hope it would be him.
Well, and at least you're staying here now so you can see what I'm talking about. You know yes. what I mean? Yeah.
For the duration of his stay... there was one silent phone call, and he actually answered it.
Huh.
And there was no one on the other end, and the call went out, they hung up. But other than that, there were no threats. There were no attacks. There were no taunts. There was nothing. So she kind of thought it was over. But then after he moved out, not long after that, that relationship ended and the calls and letters started back up again.
Interesting. Okay.
Investigators took her statement about everything that was going on and they set up a wiretap on her phone. But remember, it's the 80s. The tech we have today didn't exist yet. So this was a time-consuming process. And unfortunately, the calls were so short that they didn't last long enough to get a good trace on.
Right.
They might get a partial trace. And one time they did to a tower in Richmond, which wasn't far from where she was living. But they couldn't get anything concrete because the calls were only a few seconds at a time.
Right.
Sometimes they stated that they thought they could hear almost like a woman's voice announcing something in the background.
Hmm.
And they thought that it was at an airport because there's an airport in Richmond. And that was really what they could think of that might have like a lot of foot traffic where this wouldn't, you know, someone could kind of sneak in, use a phone and do whatever.
Right. And you'd get those announcements in the back.
And you'd kind of hear a hustle and bustle in the background where it wasn't this like dead silent, you know.
Right.
The silence is deafening kind of thing, right? They also assigned units as surveillance to her home.
Okay.
So they had parked outside and they were sort of surveilling the neighborhood and also her house. But, I mean, could you probably spot it? Maybe. But if you were following Cindy as closely as it seemed this caller was, you might notice that there was a surveillance team.
Oh, yeah.
Set up. So, or as
if a police officer is living in her home, you might take note of that if you know where she lives and call her and say that you can see her.
And you're watching her all the time. Yeah. So there's a lot here, I'm telling you. Like, you can go back and forth for hours on this, and I have, which is why I had to put the articles down. I had to, like, walk away from it. And I'm like, I need to come back to this fresh because I am in a rabbit hole here.
So, yeah.
And again, it's going to get worse. We'll talk about it. So anyway, they have the surveillance on her home in the neighborhood, but as time went on, the calls and threats stopped. And even if they had wanted to, and some of the officers really did believe Cindy and wanted to help and be a resource for her to catch who was doing this, it got very difficult for them to justify just the amount of money spent on details, like around the clock on her home, several officers at a time. In the end, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars spent investigating her case.
Right. And with such little evidence, really, what do you have to go on? Regardless of how true it is. Right.
Because the thing was, is when they were set up, no calls, no one walked up to the house. There were no attacks. No neighbors reported anything weird. There was nothing.
Mm.
And if that goes on for weeks and you have to answer to your bosses and you say, okay, what do you have? And you have to say a big fat goose egg, then you're probably not going to get that approved again.
Right.
For a little bit until you can bring them something that says this is worthwhile. So, as you might imagine, after several weeks, that surveillance was called off. And once that happened, the calls picked back up. And then it wasn't just breathing on the other end. And it wasn't even just the whispers or the minor threats. These were threats of physical and sexual harm to her.
Oh my gosh.
Graphic and more sort of eerie and like manic in the way that they sounded, according to her. And the letters continued. Her phone line was cut. This happened several times over the years.
Oh my gosh.
Then a rock was thrown through her back window of her home. And then she had noticed that her home had been entered, but nothing was taken. Like, things had been moved, but not stolen. So she was like, didn't think that she was the victim of a robbery. But she did think it was this caller.
Yeah, I would.
Before Christmas, the first year, she found a note outside of her house with a photo of a woman's corpse on it, and it just said, Merry Christmas.
Ew.
Which is terrifying. The bulb in her porch light had been tampered with. And she'd also found that her pillow had been stabbed several times with a knife. Like her bed, on her bed pillow.
Oh my God.
So that feeling of being violated and vulnerable, that someone can gain access to your home and you don't even know how.
They can cut your phone line, stab your pillows, leave you pictures, and after years, you've got nothing.
Nothing.
Ugh.
After this, Cindy's friend Agnes Woodcock stopped by Cindy's home because they had plans to get together. And Agnes knocked at the door and Cindy didn't answer, so she thought maybe she was taking a bath. I guess that was something that Cindy did regularly.
I feel you, girl.
So Agnes kind of walked around the house to see what she could see, and then she found Cindy.
Oh, no.
She found her on the ground with a black nylon stocking tied tight around her neck.
Oh, so my gosh.
So Agnes grabbed it and was able to free Cindy from it. And when Cindy came to, she said that she was attacked by a man with a knife and he had strangled her with the nylon. And then different sources report that she claimed there were two attackers and that she was sexually assaulted.
I can't believe that she lived through that.
And she's lucky she was found by Agnes. Yeah. And when the report was made to police, they investigated it, but there was no evidence at the scene of anyone else having been there.
Oh my gosh.
So there's a lot of things that happened here of note. And I want to highlight the important ones, but I can't guarantee the specific order of events because many of these things happened more than once in clusters, like all around the same time.
Okay, yeah.
But just know that, you know, all of these things did happen, but I can't guarantee that, like, this is the exact order that they happened in. When the tormenting had become especially bad, Cindy made changes that she thought would protect her. She changed her phone number several times.
Okay.
She moved several times, changed her address. She even changed her name.
Damn.
So she had been Cindy Makepeace, and when she was divorced, I believe she held on to the last name for a little bit, but she didn't want to go back to her maiden name because she figured that would be too easy to find her. So she just chose James her last name because it was common and it was short.
I get that, yeah.
And she just thought that would be an added layer of protection. But these measures weren't enough because the torment just continued. Neighbors that lived downstairs to her reported they heard a noise coming from inside her apartment when they knew that she was at work.
Ooh.
And on a few occasions, they saw a man outside they didn't recognize. But that was it. It wasn't this creepy man trying to break into her house or anything or seen leaving her home. It was just that he was outside and it was a guy they didn't know.
Right. And also, okay, the ceiling creaked. What about it?
Right.
Yeah. Ugh.
At one point, Cindy was feeling so scared, so on edge that she was afraid to go to bed at night. And she asked her friend Agnes, that same friend as before, to stay the night and also asked her husband Tom to stay.
Agnes sounds like a real ride or die.
She must have had some awesome friends. I'm telling you that. Because how many people do you know that you could call up and say, I'm being threatened, harassed, terrorized. The attacker has been in my home before. They can't catch him. I think he'll do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want a spoon tonight? How many people do you know that would say, yes, I will stay with you under these circumstances because you're afraid? You know what I mean? It's just that... Well, she must have had good friends. That's all I'm saying.
Even going to her and not being like, hey, you can sleep on our couch. Like, you come over here. It's like, okay, no, we'll go to you. We'll stay with you.
And Agnes and Tom were good friends of hers. And they saw her regularly. And they could see the impact of the stress and what it was doing to her. And they believed her. They believed her wholeheartedly what was going on. And they just wanted to help. So they agreed to stay the night. And in the middle of that night, it's reported that Cindy woke them up because she'd heard a noise coming from the basement.
Oh.
But Tom had awoken to that same noise. And the three of them crept down the stairs to discover that the basement had been set on fire.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, before you said the fire bit, all that was going through my head was like a Scooby-Doo scene of like creeping down
the,
and like...
Like each step, like on three, your toes. Yep, yeah.
And three heads like peer around the corner and then it's like, oh, it's on fire.
Yes.
Yeah.
So not quite Scooby-Doo like.
No. Oh, I want to take the mask off of this fool. Who is he? Is that old man Jenkins?
All I have to say is rut-row. Okay. So anyway, this fire is insane and... Tom tried to grab her phone in the house to call 911, and when he picked it up, he found out that the line was cut.
Yep.
So he was not going to be able to make a phone call from in there. So he ran outside to try to like get anyone's attention, any right. neighbor. I mean, again, it's the middle of the night, but he was going to run to a neighbor's house and just use their phone and say, can you call? Like, there's a fire.
Yeah.
So when he goes outside, he saw this man who was like walking up the road, I guess. And he called to him for help. He got his attention. The guy looks at him and everything. And then the man turned around and ran away.
Ooh.
And that stuck with Tom. He really couldn't describe him other than he knew it was a man. And when he called to him for help, he ran away.
Right.
When the fire was investigated, authorities found no forced entry into the home. And they said that there was no way anyone could get in the home unless they entered through a window in the basement.
Hmm.
They didn't believe anyone did this, though, because there were spider webs and some soot that was undisturbed.
Mm.
So they didn't think that somebody would have been able to manage that. So they were like, this is the only way someone could have gotten in. It's locked. It's got cobwebs. It's got like dirt and dust that's not settled. Been touched.
Yeah.
So we don't think this was the entrance point. And it's around this time that they sort of start to think that maybe Cindy isn't being truthful.
Okay. And is they the police? Is it her friends? Is it both?
Police.
Okay.
Because actually, they saw that there wasn't just one point of origin with this fire. There were several, something like six. Which meant that this wasn't an accident. This wasn't a freak thing. This wasn't she left a straightener on in the basement. I mean, who knows, maybe.
Right. Or the dryer sparked or something.
No.
Right.
This was intentional. It was arson.
Yeah.
Cindy got very frustrated, though, because, again, law enforcement by this time was starting to doubt her.
Right.
There was never any evidence. There were no solid witnesses at all. There was no DNA at any of the scenes that they'd gone to. There was no proof. There was no nothing. And when they do surveillance, they never saw anything for several weeks at a time.
Right.
And again, so many hours, so many people were impacted in game and investigating this. And then nothing happened ever. They were thinking either this, assailant, if you will, is like the most like slick.
Right.
As could be. Or maybe it's not happening at all.
Well, and the easiest answer to that is obviously maybe it's not happening at all. And I think there's a part of people that want to believe that people are good as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, well, if it's not happening, maybe she just has some mental health that she needs taken care of. And it feels a lot more safe to go with that assumption than to be like, maybe there's a someone out there who like really is concerningly good at this. Like,
exactly. And there were so many that believed her and for years.
Mm-hmm.
But again, years.
Years and years of no proof, no evidence, no DNA, nothing. Like, it's so hard because so much of law enforcement needs tangible evidence.
There needs to be something to investigate if you are investigating.
Right.
And many of them who spoke with her just got this gut feeling that she wasn't telling them anything. Hmm. Like, she would hesitate to answer certain questions, or she would sort of sidetrack to avoid answering certain questions. And really, when they poked at, do you know who this is? Do you know what's happening? She'd become emotional. She wouldn't answer at all. So they were like, she knows something. She's just not saying it.
Right.
But if you believe Cindy, you believe she's being tormented by someone, this invisible man who can terrorize her and evade capture, make the powers that be doubt her, then can you imagine what she was feeling?
I'd be so overwhelmed and angry and anxious. I'd probably feel like I was losing my fucking mind at that point, because it's like, this is happening. Why is there no evidence? Like, it's this is happening.
It's psychological agony.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine it. She was essentially by this point in a state of constant terror. And some of the people around her thought she was doing it to herself. And so if you believe her, and this wasn't her doing, then she is grasping at straws trying to show the people around her that she isn't doing it. And every time she tries, there's nothing.
Right.
That in and of itself is traumatizing, to not be believed about your trauma and having to almost shout it from the rooftops and still there's nothing.
Right.
Cindy's diary entries grew more dark throughout the years. The entries from before that had told the happenings of a happy, beautiful, successful nurse in her 40s had transformed into the scribblings of a woman living in constant fear. Her mental health decline was concerning. She was constantly paranoid, always looking over her shoulder.
Right.
It was all she could think and talk about. She was on edge. She had developed what was probably an eating disorder, though I don't know what it would have been called at the time. She had become extremely thin, and in later photos, you can even see how drawn in her face had become.
Oh.
And whether she was so stressed that she literally couldn't eat because she was in so much mental and psychological pain, or this developed as being one of the only things she could control.
Right.
And so it manifested in that way. Which don't know.
Is most of eating disorders.
But this decline in her mental state was noticed by everyone around her. And I think that specifically with disordered eating, it's one of the ways that we can see the physical manifestation of what's going on in the brain,
mm-hmm.
where you can see it get worse. With a lot of other mental illnesses, you might not, you don't necessarily have the visual. But with her, the people around her who initially might not have thought anything or may have thought she had lost a few pounds, now notice that she looks increasingly frail.
Right.
And she looks older. She looks aged. She's not sleeping. She's not taking care of herself. And so she kind of fits the part, if you will, mm-hmm. of what they're going to call crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't appear well. It's because she isn't well.
Right.
And but is she not well because of what she's going through, or is she not well because she's doing this to herself, whether she knows it or not?
Right. Oh. Ooh.
Big questions here. But she was unsure of what to do next.
Well, yeah.
So she had a bright idea that she would hire a private investigator, which actually was a good idea. I don't mean that to sound like, well, she had this great idea. It really was. It was good. His name was Ozzie Caban. And
with Ozzie Caban?
With a name like that, he had no fucking choice but to be a PI.
Truly. Or a cabana boy.
Right?
Oh, a cabana boy who is a PI on the side? Ozzie? Okay.
He wears many hats.
Yes, he does.
Ozzie Caban believed Cindy the whole time.
Good.
And he was working on and off with her, for her, I guess, for years. And he did not doubt. He wholeheartedly believed that there was someone else doing this to her.
Okay.
And he was very well versed with the evidence and spoke with her a lot and didn't get any red flags about her. Though he did, like some of law enforcement, like her parents, like some family, thought that she wasn't telling everything.
Wild.
Out loud, she said she wasn't sure who it was. But later, when they looked at her diary entries, she wrote about thinking it was her ex-husband, Roy Makepeace. Ozzie gave Cindy a two-way radio so that she could contact him in an emergency because her phone lines were cut so often.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love that idea. That's so smart.
He wanted to be able to be easily accessible. So he just kind of always had his on. She always had hers on. She ended up carrying around pepper spray everywhere she went. She kept a panic alarm on her for quite some time that would dispatch to a security agency that would then call the police. I mean, she took every measure she could possibly think right. of to protect herself. Then, warning here, animal abuse. She found 3 strangled dead cats in her yard.
No.
They had all been choked with something that was around their necks, some kind of nylon. So she...
The nylon again?
Yep. So she was obviously terrified.
Yeah.
Because she didn't... These weren't her cats, but they were clearly dumped in her property, in her right. yard. And again, she had moved in this time. Like, she wasn't living in that same place the whole time, right? She moved. She changed addresses. Like, this followed her.
Oh.
Another time she got home to find her dog Heidi shaking.
Aww.
Heidi had been injured with something tied tight around her neck.
Are you kidding?
Thankfully, Heidi made a full recovery.
Leave the animals alone.
It is just as bad to me when people harm animals, but we're cat people and animal people here. Obviously, we talk about pod pets like every single episode. We love them. Send yours.
I also, to me, it just hits the same kind of nerve. I think I sort of lump animals in with like children and elderly and disabled people and just vulnerable populations that can't necessarily take care of themselves the same way. And I'm like, what is the sick fucking pleasure that you get out of hurting something that can't fight back?
Anyone that can't advocate for themselves, like seek justice, friggin' find anything. It just, it's awful. One night, Ozzy heard Cindy's radio go off, but Cindy didn't say anything. He didn't really want to tip off the attacker if something were going on, so he just headed straight to her house. He didn't try to make contact.
Okay.
So he knocked on the door. She didn't answer. He walked around the side and looked in a window, and he could see her on the ground, seemingly dead, he thought.
Oh my gosh.
So he busted in the door, and he called 911 for help. A knife had been stabbed through her hand.
Oh my gosh.
And attached to it was a threatening note that said something like, die, bitch, or like the C word was in there somewhere, which is just not what I'm saying here. Nice try, you guys. I'm not saying it.
We do hang out on Tuesdays, but we are not speaking the C next Tuesday.
No, we are not.
No.
Luckily, when first responders got there, they administered care and she came to because she was not conscious when Ozzy found her. She did not have any memory of what happened, but she pointed to a needle prick in her arm that she claimed was from her attacker.
Mm.
So she believed that she was pricked with something and then she went unconscious. And then the next thing that she could remember, she woke up to EMTs there, essentially. But when they did drug tests on her, there was nothing in her system.
Weird.
Very. Cindy told Ozzy that not only was she receiving the weird phone calls at home, amongst other things, she was now also getting them at work.
Oh, escalation.
She reported to him that when she was out walking her dog, she was attacked by a man in a green van. And she was found walking dazed and confused with a stocking around her neck. Like, found far away. Her dog, Heidi, was found wandering in the area that Cindy said she was attacked in.
Weird.
Just on a leash, but obviously no one was holding the leash. The dog was just wandering. And so she was just found. And law enforcement sort of pointed to this as saying, if you were so afraid that you had this mystery attacker, why would you walk your dog alone at night? Why would you, you know, why would you do all these things? Which, I understand the point they're trying to make, but don't blame her. She's not, like, if we're assuming she's being attacked by somebody else, do not blame her for her attacker's actions.
The other piece of it, I guess, for me is, like, I can't imagine going through that for years. And I'm certain, and not that people are unempathetic, but even the most empathetic people at some point are probably going to say, hey, listen, like, you have to live your life. You can't not live your life because of this. And then you go and do that, and you walk your dog, who you are responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to provide a good quality of life for your dog. And that does include outdoor time and activities and also peeing before bed so that they don't pee in your bed.
Correct.
And then you get attacked and now it's your fault.
Exactly.
I would be pulling out clumps of my hair. This is, of course, operating under the assumption that she's telling the truth, even if she's not telling everything she knows. But what the fuck?
And that's the thing, is that this is pointed to, but it's like, and they're not saying like, oh, it must not be true. But it was like, if you're so scared or you don't know who this is,
why?
Then you wouldn't know who you're looking for. Like, you wouldn't know who to be afraid of.
Right.
So you wouldn't know who to stay away from. So you wouldn't likely go out and be alone and not have anyone else around you that you know, which, I mean, again, I'm not her. I can't tell you what I would do, but I imagine at least in 2024 world that we live in, I'd be hard pressed to go anywhere without my phone. I would have like my GPS on. I would probably go for a walk with somebody, but that's a luxury not everybody has. And Cindy definitely didn't back in the 80s. And it's tough because it's like you can't expect her not to live her life. And that way she's letting this attacker win, if you will.
Right.
But also there's a self-preservation instinct we have. And a lot of times that's not to be alone.
Right.
So I guess you can look at it any different way you want to. Ultimately, she said that the attack happened, but she had no memory of the attack. So it was reported. And there was no evidence. There was no anything. She was found confused. She had no memory of it, like a complete blackout.
At this point, I literally just want someone to search her house for all of the fucking nylon stockings.
We'll get there.
Ooh, okay.
Hold that thought. Not the stockings, but you'll see. Her psychiatrist, who she'd been seeing for years, believed her reports.
Okay.
But the psychologist assigned to interview Sydney believed that she was causing these things to herself.
Oh my gosh.
Even if she didn't mean to.
Okay.
He suspected that she had DID, or dissociative identity disorder, which
I was thinking that
back then would have been called multiple personality disorder. Right. We're going to talk all about this when we talk about theories, but just so you know, that was sort of like what was in his mind. The psychologist, Dr. Anthony Marcus, he thought that she was suffering again from a mental illness and that she likely had experienced a trauma in her childhood that was manifesting itself this way. And he, again, thought this was DID.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's
possible.
He said, quote, "This woman was under siege from inside or out."
Oh.
So he believed that she was afraid and believed that harm obviously was done to her.
Yeah.
But he did not feel confident saying it's definitely her or it's definitely not her.
Mm-hmm.
As the root of this, I suppose.
I appreciate that, though, because regardless, like, her feelings and this terror are very real, regardless of whether or not she can remember if it was her or someone else.
He acknowledged the validity of whether this really did happen or not. Her perception is that it happened, and nobody thought she was faking that piece, or very few did. And when we get to the theories, we'll talk about it. But by and large, most people believe that this was very real to her. It's just, was it real in the way you and I would say it's real?
Right. Who is doing it?
Correct.
Right.
Cindy had a brief stay in a psychiatric hospital for a few days. And then a few months later, she actually went in for 10 weeks.
Good for her. It's hard to do.
She was really struggling. And I imagine that she felt safe, that this might actually be a place she could sleep, that this might be a place that she wasn't in terror and agony.
Right.
But it also was used later to say, okay, well, she was clearly suffering from mental illness, which of course she was, but who wouldn't be? Who, even under circumstances where she had no history, no anything of any mental illness whatsoever, and then she does have this attacker.
Right.
I don't know anybody who wouldn't develop some kind of illness associated with the stress and the fear and the paranoia and the terror of what she's experiencing. I don't think that her diagnosis, whether she had a mental illness or not, dictated whether what she was dealing with was real or not. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And who wouldn't develop something under those circumstances? I think that's a very human, the brain is going to find a way to survive.
Yes. And I think that, especially like with my little psych cap on, right? The DSM-5 and how we diagnose mental illnesses, and even before, so the DSM-1, you know, going back to the OG, you are still basically assessed based off of your symptoms, the intensity of which they impact your ability to live your life like a normal person, and how long they've been going on. And this is an attack that's been going on for a significant period of time that would make you paranoid and anxious and upset often. And if you're getting assessed for those things, of course, it's going to be noted as a mental illness because those are the two things that they look for.
Mm-hmm.
And does that mean that she didn't have one if she was diagnosed? No, it just means that like logically speaking, anyone would develop at least one diagnostic from that, if not multiple.
How would somebody not experience severe anxiety, for example?
No idea. You know, have to.
So while she was there, they had diagnosed her with several things, and I really don't know how they arrived to these conclusions, but I will tell you them anyway. They diagnosed her with schizophrenia.
Okay.
Paranoia and psychopathy, which does not fit for me at all. But
psychopathy?
I know.
Okay.
Under hypnosis, Cindy claimed to have witnessed her ex-husband, Roy Makepeace, kill two people. A man and a woman on an island while they were docked there for an excursion. Her ex-husband Roy loved sailing and boating, if you will, and she really preferred her garden more than anything, but she would sort of like throw him a bone and attend a few occasions. So this right. wasn't like an every single day thing. They were like yachting, but sometimes they would go out. And she said that she saw him kill two people. That he killed them and chopped them up with an axe, actually.
Wow.
And this was when they were, again, docked at this some island. And so she said that this was the island. This is where it was. She had kind of gone looking for him. Something happened where, like, she had taken a nap on the boat. And when she woke up, he wasn't there. So she went off the boat onto the island, kind of walked around, found this little hut thing, and then found her husband in there. Like, having killed these people. This is what's reported.
Okay.
And so investigators set out to find this island, and they did. And they followed the directions that she said, like, where they parked the boat, where she walked, to go find this little cabin, and there was no cabin.
Okay.
So they found no evidence of this. They also found no missing persons reports about a man and a woman or anything that matched her description or the time or anything about this. This was nothing to them. They couldn't find anything tangible. And this was really kind of sealing the deal for those who didn't believe her.
Right. How could it not?
But she wholeheartedly believed this. Her sister was actually there that day, like on the boat with them. And she said that there was nothing out of the ordinary.
Aww.
And so it's just this really strange phenomena where Cindy believes she's uncovered this memory. And whether she did or didn't, I'm not her. I can't tell you that. But she thought she did. She also submitted to a few different polygraph tests. And those results revealed that on questions related to knowing who was behind the attacks, they determined that she wasn't being truthful.
Wild.
But this didn't mean it was her, but they didn't necessarily think she was being forthcoming about who she thought it might be. And then another time a test was done and it determined that she was being truthful. So it was like, I guess it just depended. I mean, hell, it was the 80s. We don't even trust them now. They're not admissible, but they do tend to give you kind of a good start on what direction you might want to pursue your investigation. And
right.
You know, a lot of this could be attributed to she was so nervous. She was so stressed and paranoid. She was on a lot of medication at that time. And any right. one of those things, let alone all of those things, could have impacted the results of a polygraph test from 40 years ago. Like, we don't know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's no way to know. You can't dissect that and figure out what the root problem is, because all it does is really record how confident you are.
Right. And, you know, they're not without fault, so don't put too much weight on it either way, but...
Right. But I guess, like, my thought is if you're not confident in anything because you're losing your mind because clearly something's happening and you're paranoid and nobody believes you, but it's still happening to you,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be confident for shit.
No, not at all. In late 1985, there was yet another escalation. Cindy had been found in a ditch. She had been suffering from hypothermia and she was 6 miles from home.
What?
She was semi-conscious, wearing one men's work boot on one foot and a glove on one hand. And she had a nylon stocking around her neck. when she came to, she said she remembered the prick of a needle and she didn't remember anything else.
So that's a recurring theme here.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Cindy eventually told investigators that she had been hiding who she thought did it. And she was convinced it was Roy Makepeace. Again, we knew this from her diary entries from before. Right. But now she's actually saying this out loud. Again, we didn't know that from the diary until after she'd passed away. We'll talk about that. He had actually been on their suspect list, obviously. I mean, he had been on their suspect list essentially the entire time because it's always the ex, right?
Yeah, or the husband, and he's both. So
they set up a recorded line for her to call him and ask him if he was the one doing this to her. And he denied it and almost seemed frustrated, like, no, I told you it's not me. I don't know who's doing this to you. Like, I'm willing to help you, but it's not me.
Okay, interesting.
In 1988, she was found unconscious in her car, nude from the waist down, hog-tied with her hands and feet behind her.
Aww.
There was a nylon stocking tied around her neck, but there was no sexual assault component.
Okay.
Which is odd. When you hear that, you assume.
Especially when you're partially or entirely nude. Yeah.
And unconscious and tied up. She had no memory of what happened. She had asked Ozzy for help because she had actually planned to install an infrared alarm system in her home. And this was kind of getting to the point where she's like, I need all of these things. Like, I'm sure there were technological developments in this time. And, you know, she was like, I need to have, these are things I need to invest in.
Right. I mean, who wouldn't? Especially if she's done everything she could afford and grab to protect herself before. You're not going to stop.
Right. In the spring of 1989, the attacks had decreased. And she finally felt like it might be over. She wrote a letter to her sister saying that for the first time in a very long time, she felt optimistic.
Aww.
So over the course of 6 years, 1982 to 1989, she filed nearly 100 police reports.
Oh my gosh.
On May 25th, 1989, Cindy James went missing.
Ugh.
She had a few days off of work, planned days off. She had taken days off. I think it was 5 total. I think there was a weekend in there. And had plans that night, that first night, with Agnes and Tom, who you might remember. They were going to have a game night.
Cute.
But when they got to her house, they normally like beeped their horn a couple times to let her know that they got there. Right. And she'd normally kind of pop in the window, wave, and kind of wave them in.
Right.
So they did that. And there was no Cindy. But Cindy was expecting them. They had these plans. They'd confirmed it with her. She wouldn't have been out at that hour, so they knew something was wrong. They drove by the bank that she usually went to because I think it was payday and they knew she would have gotten her paycheck that day. So
yeah, that's a decent assumption.
They wanted to see, okay, did she go cash it at the bank? And then they found her car. And her wallet was there, and so were groceries.
Oh.
And like her wallet had been kicked under the car. Like there was an attempt to try to hide it, like her purse and stuff.
Oh.
And again, groceries that were still in bags. And then there was a birthday present and wrapping paper for a friend's son. She had bought like a croquet set, I think, for a friend's Aww. Son. And she had bought the wrapping paper. She was going to wrap it because she had, I think, either that weekend or something, she had that birthday coming up. So she was like making plans for the future, you know?
Right. This isn't someone who was planning this, especially, I mean, and listen, maybe this is me in today's economy, but you're telling me you're going to go to the grocery store and then leave?
I know.
You know how much money you're dropping there?
I know.
Yikes.
When police arrived, they noticed blood in the car.
Ooh.
Cindy James was missing for 2 weeks. Then her body was found.
Oh.
She was found hogtied in the yard of an abandoned home. Some bitch died here, was spray painted on the house next to her body.
Ugh.
Though the home was abandoned, it was near a place where there was a lot of foot traffic, so it did seem kind of weird that no one had seen her there for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And depending on the reports that you read, some say that she had that marbling that we've talked about. I think we talked about it in the Jerry Brudos case, but if you were to die, for example, if not you, if someone were to pass away lying on their back,
right,
in the hours following that, the blood from the body would pool in the lowest point of gravity, which would be your back. So you'd get the pooling along the back of the arms, your back, back of the legs, all of that. And when they found her, that marbling had actually been like face up.
Oh,
so it kind of seemed like she had been moved after she died. But was she moved or was she just turned? We don't know. Like,
okay,
maybe not relocated.
Right. But just flipped over to her back. Okay.
But then there's other reports that don't mention that at all. So is that true? We don't know. I don't know. The autopsy revealed that she had a lot of drugs in her system. I think like a Dexedrine and some sedatives and morphine. A lot of morphine.
Well, it's nice that one drug test finally came back with stuff.
Correct. And she had like Ativan in her system, which if you don't know was like a sedative. I mean, it's typically an anti-anxiety medication.
Yeah.
Morphine's a pain medication. So we kind of have a mix of drug classes here, but plenty to overdose on. And she'd also been strangled with a nylon stocking. And again, she was hogtied. This case caused so much unrest in the community that the most expensive coroner's inquest was held. Like, it, up until that point, it was the most expensive inquest in history.
Oh my gosh.
In British Columbia, I should specify. It took 3 months. There were 80 witnesses, investigators, medical professionals, knot tying experts, mental health experts, you name it, they had it. And you know what the results were?
What?
That they didn't know. That her death was the result of an unknown event.
Oh my gosh.
Because nobody could make sense of all of the information. There was nothing you could point to. There were so many things. Did she do it to herself? Did she not? Was it somebody else? Was it her ex-husband? We're going to talk about all of it.
Oh my gosh.
This is a case where no one agrees. Investigators believed that she had killed herself by ingesting drugs and then tying herself. Whether she anticipated that she'd be found before she died, or if she thought she wouldn't get hurt at all, they didn't know, but they think that it was the result of her doing. Knot experts said that it would be very difficult to tie herself up like that, but I don't think anybody said it was impossible. Like, they said it would be really challenging to do it, but could she do it? Maybe.
Technically, maybe. Okay.
I heard a couple podcasts claim that this must be a cover-up because she'd been injected with the drugs. And there was no needle found near her body.
Okay.
So, you know, if she had injected herself, it would have been a matter of minutes. How could she have done that, tied herself up?
Spray painted, placed herself, yeah.
Her car was parked 6 miles away. There was no way she walked that far, did all of that. But then at the same time, that's assuming it was an injection. And I couldn't find anywhere that confirmed it was an injection. What if it was ingested?
Yeah, I mean, your body takes time to process that. It's not going to hit as fast or the same way as an injection would. But also, you know, she's reported this history of injections. I would hope somewhere along the line, someone would be able to verify if there was a prick or not.
Exactly. And then there was also the fact that she had recently been released from the mental health facility where she was inpatient. And I mean, I say recently, but she had been following up with her psychiatrist, and nobody, that those who knew her, the medical professionals, nobody saw any red flags that would lead them to believe she might harm herself.
Right.
That she was, that it would have gotten to this point. Whether you believe she was behind it all along, leave that on the side. But nobody thought in the days and weeks leading up to this that this was the case. In fact, she was feeling very optimistic and thought that it was nearly over. Now, sometimes that's indicative of somebody who's sort of I guess, come to terms with and made up their mind that they will be ending their own life.
Yeah.
And that sort of optimism and relief could be indicative of that. But she had plans for the future and she continued to make plans with those around her and the people she loved.
Right.
And nobody had any inkling that something was wrong in that way. It's very strange.
It is. And it also, I guess it worries me because she's around healthcare professionals all day.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who know the signs, who know what to look for, who can spot it, or at least know her well enough to say, hey, you're acting different. You good? And if she says, yeah, I'm doing fucking great.
Funny you say that. She'd actually been asked to step down.
Interesting.
But not because she was like harming anybody, but because like they could tell she just had so much going on and mentally she was preoccupied and that much responsibility.
Yeah. You don't
was
wanna,
a lot.
You don't want to leave that up to chance if she didn't. If she wasn't able to get herself to a point where she could focus on that and really give it the time and attention, because it is healthcare. It's important.
But they did end up putting services in place and help her get a different job. So it wasn't like,
oh my gosh,
it wasn't like she left on these bad terms or that she did such a bad job that like they didn't think that she could work there anymore. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like a firing.
It was like, let's find something that's a better fit right now.
Yes, because yeah. Right now with what you've got going on and the impact that this has had on you, maybe this added stress isn't what you need.
Yeah.
All in all, law enforcement believed that she was behind it all along, and her family and Ozzie Caban believed that she was victimized by somebody else.
That's so fascinating.
And again, the coroner's inquest gave us nothing. It gave us a lot, but it gave us no definitive answers, and unfortunately by the end of this episode we won't have them either. So if you were really hoping that we were going to reach this very happy conclusion, all we can do is speculate, as everyone Damn else it. has. But let's talk about some theories, because they are aplenty.
Ooh, okay, lay them on me.
I want to touch on a few. In everything I've read, it seems like each source has an entirely different view of what happened, which we don't often get. This
True.
Adds to the intrigue for me, because it's a whodunit on every single level. So yeah. I want to talk about a couple of theories here in no particular order, because again, I still don't know what I think. And I would love to hear from our listeners on this one, because I am a big question mark on it, but I can really see it from every direction. So the theory that investigators subscribe to is, again, that she did it to herself. All of it.
Right.
Every last bit of it. They didn't have any tangible evidence to suggest someone else was involved, and this is true. Many thought in the beginning that she wasn't being truthful, thought she was concealing information. But then, you know, her family, her PI, and the investigators sort of then all agreed that she knew more than she was letting on. And so that's kind of a common theme, but that just might be that she thought it was Roy and she didn't want to say it.
Right. And especially if, you know, going back to, like you said, the divorce sucked but ended up being relatively amicable, if they could go out together, like, where's his motive?
Right. But then she remembers, oh, he killed two people. Remember this memory she's recovered.
Yeah, I have a hard time with hypnosis recovered memories. And maybe this is just because I was so fascinated by it, my abnormal psychology class in college, that I think I might have like memorized the entire textbook on accident. But they're so faulty. I mean, memories as a whole are so faulty.
Correct.
But especially once you have someone else involved, it becomes this real question of like, how much is memory? How much is implanted? How much is a suggestion that your brain took and was like, yeah, no, that makes sense.
Right.
And so I guess for that, like, yes, it happened. I don't put personally a lot of weight in that, not because it didn't impact her, it wasn't a part of her narrative, but because we don't know if that was quote unquote recovered, how much is recovered and how much is developed.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry. I like that stuff.
Don't apologize. This is all I want to talk about for the rest of this episode. So let's talk about why you might believe she did this to herself on purpose, meaning this was intentional, that she knew the part she was playing, and essentially it was an act.
Okay.
Like we said, they thought she was hiding information. And when you feel like the reporting party isn't truthful, you're already at a disadvantage. The phone calls weren't traceable. In most cases, the calls didn't last long enough to trace at all. Online, you can find recordings of some of the messages on her answering machine.
Damn.
You can also find a recording of a voicemail that was left on Roy's answering machine.
Hmm.
And some argue that the voice sounds like a woman trying to sound like a whispering, hushed man.
Okay.
Especially the one left on Roy's voicemail said something like, "Cindy, dead meat, die soon," or something like that. And it's like, "Cindy," like, it's just very, it's, I think you'd hear me do that and you'd be like, okay, that's a weird girl, but that's a girl, right? Like, you'd be like, what's she doing? What's she on? But you would probably be able to guess, right?
Right.
And a lot of people who heard that were mixed, because they were like, it just sounds like somebody who's trying to be quiet and hushed and disguise their voices sounding like something different, but many thought it was Cindy.
Weird. Okay.
So that was something they could point to. And again, the belief here is that she left this on her own machine. She left the message on Roy's. This doesn't look too good.
No.
And law enforcement took note of that. And again, no physical evidence. None. Zero. Nothing.
Yeah.
The letters didn't have return addresses. Duh. No one saw anyone delivering anything. Nobody saw anyone break in. Nobody saw anything ever. And her neighbors knew. Like, she was telling them. Police were there, right, all the time. Like,
I mean, if I was a neighbor, my nosy ass would find out just because I couldn't stop eavesdropping, let alone this woman who's terrified, who's like, hey, oh my gosh, I think I'm going to die. Will you look out for anything weird?
Yeah. And of course, law enforcement are interviewing the neighbors and other people in the neighborhood asking, have you seen anything, any weird cars? I mean, they're canvassing, they're doing what they can.
Right.
And the answer time and time again was no, nothing. No. There were no witnesses. No one came forward to say they saw anyone outside her house. No one saw her home being vandalized. No one saw dead cats being thrown in her yard, or her dog being harmed, or her porch light being smashed. No one was seen going to her home or leaving from her home. At one point, even her garden was like vandalized, like dug up, basically. No one saw that happen.
Boo.
The only thing that I can kind of point to with potential here is the man that Tom saw outside after the basement was on fire. Remember, he went outside and he saw somebody, yeah, and they ran. And that's suspicious. But at the same time, is it also possible that that guy saw a man running at him from a burning house and he got spooked and he ran away?
Yeah.
I think if I saw somebody running at me at night, I don't really know what they're running. If they're running at me, I'm going to run away. And if they're running from something, I need a head start. So that's all I got. You know what I mean? I don't know that, yeah, I would stand idly by if I had any reason to be afraid. So.
Well, and the other piece of it, too, is like some of us, me, are just jumpy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I used to go running in high school and there was... I still think about it and I like giggle because I think it probably looked insane to the other guy. But like, I was running one morning and I saw someone, I think they were literally just walking back from getting their mail. But I like immediately froze and then I just bolted. So it was like, you know, it's early in the morning and my little baby CJ brain was like, ah.
Yep.
But all this guy saw was like his mail and he's probably flipping through like fucking Bath and Body Works coupons and then looks up, sees this like 17-year-old like a deer in headlights just take off.
And he's like, was it something I said?
I know. He was like, you can have it if you want. I don't care.
I know.
So I note that that is suspicious and that's not necessarily something that I would hope I would do if someone was asking for help, but also our brains are animal brains. They are designed to keep us safe. It's not unheard of or unthinkable that this guy just was like, oh shit, I need to move.
Like, he's running from a fire. I need to also run in that direction and take off. And so if this was an attacker, I don't know. If this was your average guy who just saw a other man running at him and figured he looks like he knows what he's doing, I'm going to run away too, then, you know, I can't fault the guy for that.
No.
She also had no memory of any of the attacks. So, like, entire hours were missing from her memory. And this is only reportedly the case when there was an attack. She had needle marks and tested positive for morphine after some attacks, but not all of them. That could be why she has no memory of events. And while it's entirely possible she was drugged, again, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but I don't know what to believe. She's a nurse. Would she have had access to these medications and medical supplies?
Probably.
I assume. And you might be saying, Allie, my girl.
Allie, my girl.
My second favorite podcast host.
My first favorite podcast host. My good time boy. My sweet cheese.
My rotten soldier. Why would she do this to herself? So this theory that she did it and she did it on purpose usually points to factitious disorder.
Okay.
Or what was previously known as Munchausen's. Remember when we covered Gypsy Rose Blanchard? Great plug here, by the way. If you haven't heard it, you should. We discussed Munchausen's by proxy, or factitious disorder imposed on another. In that diagnosis, the individual is harming another for the attention and praise that typically a caregiver receives for taking care of somebody who is ill. Yep. Dee Dee made Gypsy ill so she could be the superhero mom who gave it her all and fought for her little girl, right? And that's putting it far too simply, and if you want a deeper dive, again, you should really check it out. But we're taking the by proxy out of it.
Yes, it's no longer to someone else.
This isn't to somebody else. If you believe this theory, then you believe that she did this to herself. So this is as if Dee Dee made herself ill for the attention of being ill.
Right.
So this theory suggests that Cindy is doing these things to herself so that she can gain the attention associated with being a victim. And with each thing, she accelerates, she escalates, she exacerbates, and with each thing, it gets worse. She's found dazed, but I have no memory of it. I don't know what happened. You can't ask me. This is how I was found. And if you believe that, then you believe that she was acting, essentially.
Right. And especially in this as a theory that she knows she's doing it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Another theory is she did it, but not on purpose. Along this line, there's another theory, sort of, which suggests that Cindy was the culprit all along, but she herself had no idea and believes it to be done by somebody else. Under this theory, it's believed that she suffered from DID, or dissociative identity disorder, again, formerly called multiple personality disorder. I believe we touched on this again in the case of Gypsy Rose when we talked about Gypsy's boyfriend. And how that was something that almost he suggested about himself, but was disproven. But under this little umbrella, it's believed that another identity assumes control and sabotage Cindy. This theory does explain why Cindy would have no memory of an attack and would sort of come to and realize what happened after the fact, but no memory of the events as they happened. So the real Cindy, if you will, would have no recollection of the events while another identity is in control. DID is the ultimate compartmentalization and is born out of significant trauma.
Right.
Typically, someone with DID has been through trauma so severe that their mind essentially divides itself and creates an alter personality or several to cope with the trauma. It's self-preservation at its core. A staggering 90% of those with DID suffered childhood abuse or neglect. It's more common in adult females. And 70% of those with DID have attempted suicide in the past. Many of them have several attempts or other self-inflicted injury behavior.
Yeah.
So she kind of fits the statistics. Not that there aren't outliers, and we talk about a lot of outliers on this podcast, so not to exclude that. But a lot of this sort of fits for me because we have to sort of believe that when people are saying she doesn't know and this fear seems genuine, it could be. It could also be right. true that she is the one doing it, even if it's not Cindy. But let's call the other personality Becky.
Right.
So I'm making this up entirely. Please nobody believe this or like go to look up Becky and Cindy James because it's not true. But I'm saying if Becky is the one doing this, when Becky takes over, Becky's sabotaging Cindy and she's harming her and she's doing that. And so when Cindy gets back in control, Becky sort of turns off right. and Cindy doesn't know what Becky did. Cindy can find out what Becky did by finding out what happened to her, but she might think this was another person.
Right. And if you don't remember and you see a needle prick and you say, oh, okay, I'm connecting dots. I must have been drugged. This must have happened. Like the hallmark of DID is not remembering your alter's behaviors and actions because you're not the one in control, basically.
Like they're literally stored in different parts of the brain. It isn't possible for Cindy to access Becky's memories or what she was doing. The way that it works, it is ultimately like the brain splits itself into different people that might be better equipped to handle the trauma at hand.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess for me, if I lean towards a Cindy did it herself theory, I lean more towards this one. There are themes that connect for me. If her dad was relatively intense or heavy-handed, no pun intended, in the punishments, and you know, she's moving around a lot, she doesn't have a lot of social connections, she doesn't have anyone there to stand up for herself, that to me is all of the makings for someone who might develop this as a child. And then you see her sort of move on through life. She develops an interest in medical fields and health, which also often happens with people who go through traumatic events because you want to understand what happened to you. And then all of the memory gaps and the genuine authenticity that people felt her fear was, and sort of even just the deterioration of her mental health and how stark and intense that was. Like, to me, if it's a Cindy did it, my weight's here.
If it's a Cindy did it, I don't believe the Munchausens. I would lean more in this direction. But again, I don't believe any of the theories hard enough to say this is wholeheartedly what I think happened.
Right.
But if we look at DID for Cindy, then we have to acknowledge that there was some significant trauma in her past, likely in childhood.
Yeah.
Which is what Abby's alluded to about her dad. And again, reports claim that her dad was abusive, so it could be that.
Right.
Another source mentioned briefly that there was childhood sexual abuse from a family member.
Okay.
And while that could be true and could be the source of the trauma, I didn't see it in enough reputable sources to give it that much credit. So
okay.
If you look into the case, you may see that. I would say it's widely accepted as fact. What this okay. also means, though, is that this would likely have been something she suffered from since she was very young.
Right.
And there are no documents that I could find that provide a diagnosis.
Okay.
So she's in her mid-40s, and she's in her mid-40s at the time of her death, meaning if she experienced childhood trauma, let's just call her 10 years old for round numbers, then that would mean over 30 years later this develops. Very unlikely. Very, very unlikely. There would have been reports of this. She would have struggled significantly in the past. The likelihood of the onset of this being in her 40s is so very unlikely that it's kind of a hard buy for me.
Well, and that's where, I guess for me, my thought period is she didn't report it or it isn't DID.
Well, and the other thing is, too, because we'll talk about not reporting it, too, because that is important to me. But also important to know is that her ex-husband, Roy Makepeace, told investigators that he believed Cindy had DID. And Roy was either a psychologist or I think he was a psychiatrist. So he was a doctor, but he was a psychiatrist.
So
and
he-
so
he knows all of the workings here.
Yes, and we're going to talk about him in a minute because he's also a theory.
Well, of course.
But with the DID diagnosis, if we are in that camp right now, then I would question why there aren't abundant reports of this.
Right.
But then I remind myself that we'd be talking about the 50s, 60s, and 70s, a different time, lots of stigma, and her family moved around a lot with her dad's job. So in my mind, maybe they didn't live anywhere long enough where they could have a continuum of care for her. Maybe they didn't live anywhere long enough where anybody picked up on the signs. Maybe teachers at school didn't notice any kind of issues going on. Maybe guidance counselors didn't. Maybe other kids didn't. We don't know.
Right.
But the constant moving in and of itself, I'm sure you could probably argue that that was traumatic, although it's not like what she reported. But I mean, truthfully, anything can be trauma if it impacts the person as trauma would. So that's not, I'm not here to say what is and isn't traumatic, but it's not like she's pointed to moving a lot as
like, being this is what happened.
Really tough thing for her. But I also just think that it's possible that those things could have been going on, but we're talking about a time period where there was a lot of stigma. We didn't know a lot. It was lock them up or give them pills.
Yep.
And maybe either the family didn't want to bring her. Maybe they were afraid of what would have happened. Maybe they didn't think anything was wrong, or maybe this isn't the case at all.
Right. And I think, you know, I agree. Part of the not reporting, I do attribute to the times. Part of it could be mental health stigma within military families.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I assume that that is more difficult because I know we have a much more difficult treating and getting reports from veterans. So I can imagine that's part of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And also part of it could be that she didn't fucking know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If it's DID and your memory goes out whenever you switch, I mean, hell, I don't remember 3 days ago what I did for dinner unless I really sit down and try to piece it together.
Mm-hmm.
How often is a kid who doesn't care about that kind of thing and doesn't need to think about it really trying to go back and figure out if she can remember?
Yeah.
So I don't know. This has some weight for me.
Well, another issue I have with this theory is that we haven't ruled out substance use.
Correct.
And several mental health disorders can be influenced by substance use. We know she was injected with morphine. We know she had access to it. We know her quality of work suffered because we know that she was asked to leave her job. And we know that those around her didn't believe she told them everything.
Right.
These are all things that could be the result of suffering from mental illness, suffering from a substance use disorder, or suffering from a stalker and experiencing significant psychological duress as a result of years of torment. We just don't know.
Right.
You can't point to any one thing and say this is wholeheartedly it and here's how I know that. Another issue I have with this is personally, I've not come across a case where an individual is tormented by another personality because typically they're born out of a protective measure for yourself.
Right.
So it's unlikely to me that this protective measure would cause her harm, but doesn't mean it's impossible. Hell no.
I also think too that part of the, like, on that train of thought,
mm-hmm.
to piggyback off of what you said.
Thank you, Miss Discussion Post Abby.
Mm-hmm. I would like to agree and thank concur. You. And mm. I really liked the part where you said,
yeah, right.
Just kidding. No, but sort of in that exact same line of thought, most of these are protective, but I do just always throw out there that, like, most bad coping habits, which is a really tame way of putting dissociative identity disorder, but if we really boil it down, it's born out of coping, mm-hmm. right? Most coping techniques that end up being maladaptive are really great for a time period, and then they stop being helpful. And that doesn't automatically mean you can shut them off. I think this also happens with substance use a lot, where people are like, ah, it's the only escape I have. And then suddenly you can't escape from the only escape you have.
Right.
And part of me wonders if it's something like that, but it's very infrequent that you see an alter physically trying to harm you. It's not like, oh, this thing helps me. Okay, I'm going to keep doing that even though it's no longer serving me. It's like, no, I'm going to hurt you now.
Yep.
And that seems it seems like an outlier if it is a DID case.
There's just so much. You could go on forever.
Oh, I could.
And yeah, and I would love to do it, and we'll probably do that after, but I'm sure nobody wants to hear all of it.
So and what's the other one?
Another theory. There's more. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Like I said, I would touch on the husband did it, right? It's always the husband. Their divorce was amicable. There didn't seem to be issues. They were still friends, hung out at times. I imagine double dating with your ex-husband is like a whole other ride in and of itself, but if it worked for them, then it did. Who am I to judge? But again, there were reports that he was abusive in their relationship. And even in her diary, she wrote about that. Now, These aren't substantiated by anything. She didn't have hospital records or anything to, I guess, sort of confirm these allegations that he was abusive. But there rarely are. Just because there's no friggin' hospital documentation does not mean it didn't happen. And that's not, I'm not going to dismiss it based on that. But the only concrete, like, I guess, quote unquote, in writing we have is literally her writing in her diary about it.
Yeah. So it's her who is the reporter who people are finding faulty.
Right.
Yeah.
And physical abuse is rarely sold separately from emotional abuse.
Exactly.
So there's something to poke at here. Maybe post-divorce, he felt resentment. Or maybe he wanted her back. Or maybe it's 500 other things. Again, he was a psychiatrist, which meant he could prescribe medications. And though following all of this, I do believe he lost his his license to practice, which is interesting.
Hmm.
And I don't know that he'd necessarily have access to opioids, but he would be able to prescribe other medications that might inhibit Cindy's ability to think clearly.
Right.
Also including Ativan, sedative medications. These are prescriptions that at least today in this world, a psychiatrist can prescribe.
Right.
So morphine, maybe not, but other sedative-like medications, probably.
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind is with psychiatry, it's medicine with a focus in psychology. It's not psychology with a focus in medicine. So he might have had the ability to do that. But I'm also just thinking with the times, maybe morphine was used for something.
Could have been.
You know, I mean, we've done so many different stupid fucking medical experiments, which got us here. So great. Yay. But like, you know, there were times that we used to drain people of their blood because we thought that's what was making them sick. So exactly. I'm not going to say that this is like an infallible medical system in any way. The other thing is, like, I appreciate you reminding us that he is a psychiatrist because I was not putting two and two together that he could have had access to those drugs as well.
Well, and not only would he have access to the medications, and we're going to talk about the rest of the medications too. But, you know, he knew how the brain worked. Yep. Who else would be better equipped to psychologically torture somebody than him?
No one.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Who else would know how to make her appear, and just for lack of a better word, I'm going to say crazy. You know?
Yeah.
All I know is for the 16 years she was married, there were no reports of stalking. No reports of major mental illness or episodes or anything like that. And then months later, after they are divorced, she's victimized.
And frequently and repeatedly.
Correct.
Yeah.
And she wrote in her diary, she thought it was him. And when I said before that we'd go back to the medications that she was on, after her death, when her family was cleaning out her home, they found like stockpiles of medication, basically.
Wild. Okay.
She had a lot of like morphine and other things that she shouldn't have had. And so was that him putting it there? Was it him giving it to her all along? Was it something that she was struggling with? Was it an alter personality? You know what I'm saying? That potentially could have been using it where she didn't know. Because I know you asked about like, well, if we find a box of like the nylon stockings, then I think we have our answer. But to me, it's not the stockings they found, but it's the medication that she had claimed to have been stuck with several times. And to me,
right.
Like, they essentially said she hoarded them. Like, she had a lot. Like, she had prescriptions that were valid from her doctor, but it was like she wouldn't take them, or she held on to them for a really long time, and so she had all of this extra medication around the house.
Got it.
So even if it was prescribed to her, does it mean she was taking it as prescribed? No. So there's still more to poke at.
And the other piece is, like, if it wasn't prescribed and she's a nurse, she has access if someone else isn't giving it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Another theory, was it a police officer?
Also possible.
A cop would know when the surveillance is on and when it's not. They could slip in and out of a crime scene probably easily.
Absolutely.
Was it Pat McBride?
I actually had thought the same thing. When you said he stayed there and the call stopped, I was like,
Me too.
Because, yes, someone who is stalking could see, hey, there's a cop there. Maybe I shouldn't. But also, if the calls are from the cop and you're always with him.
Like, if the calls are literally coming from inside the house.
Right.
Then maybe not.
Right. Ugh.
But this had already started, and then she contacted law enforcement.
Fair.
So they hadn't met yet. Doesn't mean that she would have needed to have met him. He could have seen her and become obsessed. Whatever. I don't know.
Right.
But what we do know is that for that brief period of time they lived together, very little happened. Before that and after that, a lot happened.
Yep.
He even went on later to have, like, sexual assault charges, which is fucking concerning in and of itself. Just someone in any position of power.
I'd say so.
What if it's not him, but someone else on the force? I mean, he's the name I can point to where there was a relationship there, but we're talking about 6 to 7 years of, like, near constant contact with law enforcement making reports. Does that mean not somebody else got involved? Was she with anybody? We don't know.
Well, and I guess my other thought too is, like, okay, so what do we see at hospitals? Security guards.
Mm-hmm.
Where might a security guard also work? A police force. Who might work at a hospital? A psychiatrist or a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you have youth that have behavioral challenges, my thought process is that you're probably not a stranger to law enforcement, even if it's not for you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty of ways this could have happened before her reporting, but it is fascinating to me that it stopped while the officer that we know was there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
My last theory I'd like to present to you is, what if she was truly tormented by this unknown stranger who got off on psychological torture, driving her to the brink of sanity, taking a perfectly healthy and happy woman and inflicting such chaos that she quite literally couldn't take it. And she develops mental illnesses as a result. But it is not what's causing her pain. It's just a result of the pain.
Right.
Which is essentially saying, what if she had this man, and I'm assuming it's a man because they always said it sounded like a man and whatever. And she would say she was attacked by men. But she could never describe them. She could never give, like, a description to a sketch artist or anything like that. So what if it was just because it was somebody that she didn't know and she didn't really remember their face? If it's somebody at all, and that's a big if.
Right. And looking into this as a theory, I also see, like, for me, I'm kind of between this DID. I struggle here because part of me is like, okay, I could definitely see a world in which this is her husband. I could also definitely see a world where this is a police officer. I could also definitely see a world where this is her mental illness. And I could also see a world in which it's 1980s. We don't have that great access, vocabulary, normalcy of mental health being in the world. And if this happened and someone developed a mental health problem, who wouldn't want to write it off as that?
Mm-hmm. But it's like a chicken or the egg thing.
Did
the mental health present as a result of the stress of what was going on?
Or did what happened come as a result of the mental health? Yeah.
So we just don't know.
And I think that you know, I am always inclined to believe people. I would way rather do that and be wrong than doubt everyone I know.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, I think that's what that turns into otherwise. Yeah. But, you know, it's so hard to sit and look and actually think that if this was happening to her and nobody cared, because it was not that nobody cared, but nobody really had anything to go off. And how do you keep that faith in someone after years? That's just, it's so heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking for her to end up dead and degraded anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there's 100 different rabbit holes to go down with this. And I'm presenting the things that I could find that seemed reputable to me, that weren't opinionated, that weren't a lot of people like blogging about it, that were like fear mongering and like exaggerating a lot of the facts, especially in the beginning, like making it seem like it came out really bad, like it started with like the dead cats and that's not what happened, you know? So it was like weeding through a lot of bullshit, trying to put together a comprehensive list of theories and like events that happened that I could, that could be backed up. So I hope I did okay with you, for you guys. And I have to end it with this, that I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Clinicians seem split on whether this was really happening or not. Some police officers believed her. Many of them didn't.
Right.
Many of them speaking with her thought she was full of it. Her parents and Ozzie Caban thought she was being terrorized. They thought that for the entire time. Ozzie didn't believe that she would spend the time or money that she did if she were behind it.
Right.
If she knew it. Like, she moved. She changed her name. She changed her phone number. She lost contact with a lot of people. She invested, she was starting to like put in that alarm system in the home. She had Mace and the radios and like a panic alarm. And she had all of these things. If this were something she were doing to herself, that's an awful lot of time and money to invest in something that you know is needless.
Right.
And no one believed that she would kind of commit to the bit that long. That just seems like an unreasonable long time.
Yeah.
To do that.
And if you're like moving around, you're changing your number, there's plenty of opportunities for you to say, okay, I'm done. I'm going to drop it.
Mm-hmm. And her parents, especially her dad, they said she would never harm herself in that way. And so when her death was ruled that it was a possible suicide, her dad was like, she would have never ended it that way. She was determined to see this through. She wouldn't have given up like that, essentially. She so badly wanted people to believe her and knew in his heart as her dad that this wouldn't have been how it happened. And so, like, until her family died, they were like, she has been harmed. Her sister went on to write a book about it.
Aww.
Believing her, believing everything. And so it really, it just matters how you feel about it. I think there was a writer from the New Yorker who wrote a book, and he wrote it about how she did it to herself. And so, like, you can read books about either way. And so they're going to handpick what they share, you know?
Right. You're always going to pick the evidence that best supports your theory.
And, you know, Cindy's family has a very different view of it. They loved her. They knew her. Does that mean that they knew her the best? Probably. Does it also mean that they have the most reason to be biased because they knew and loved her the best and the most? Also, yes. So it, so that just depends. So I end with this. I have no fucking clue. I have no idea. I think all of them hold weight. I personally lean more toward Roy Makepeace because I think he'd know how to do it and he'd know how to make her look like that. I think if she and her gut believed it was him,
there's something to be looked at.
I like to
there.
Think more there, but I also think that toward the end, and I think others would even confirm it, that she wasn't exactly the most reputable source because she herself had no idea what the fuck was happening.
Right. So, damn, dude.
So that is the case of Cindy James.
Well, I'd like to start by saying I think we should all make peace knowing that
fuck
there's
you.
No answer. I'm sorry.
Fuck off.
I'm sorry. I'm not that sorry. I just needed another one in there.
I know.
But this sucks.
It does. It does. And so we're going to include some mental health resources down below mental health is so important. And Cindy didn't have these resources. I mean, regardless of whether there was this anonymous person or not, doesn't matter. What she went through was real. And
absolutely.
She was deserving of services for that. And I'm glad that she was able to get those when she felt she needed them. But I would like to say that we've come a hell of a long way from where we were 40 years ago.
Bless up.
So we will have those linked below. And I would love to know what you guys think. I'd love for you to either reach out to us on Instagram or send us an email or something about your thoughts on this. And if you've heard this covered anywhere else, again, I listened to Case File. I thought it was a good episode. I think I might have watched like a quick YouTube like summary thing of it, but most of my research was just reading about it and trying to find different sources.
Yeah.
Lots of like newspaper clippings. I wish newspaper.com would just sponsor us because I use them so fucking
all
much.
All the time.
But, you know, if you're listening, newspaper.com,
please.
For the love of God. Anyway, so I will leave you guys with that. I would love to hear from you. I would hope that you guys send us your thoughts, feelings on this, your pod pets, especially after this episode, please. Need some good kitties and doggies.
Yes, happy, healthy living.
If you
kitties and doggies.
If you would like to see the people, places, things that we're talking about, you can take a look at our Instagram page. We also have highlights that are reprieves that are designed to be like funny and uplifting. We make memes all the time because that's just fun. We like to share pod pets. We share mental health resources. We have a lot going on our Instagram page. You kind of have to see it to believe it. I'm going to be honest with you. But Abby, if they wanted to find our Instagram, where would they go?
They would go to their little Instagram app or instagur.am and they would type in that little search bubble about time for true crime pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period TIME period FOR period TRUE period CRIME period POD because podcast was too long. But if they, much like podcast, wanted to send something a little too long for Instagram, they could definitely do that to our email, podpets included, or if you just don't have Instagram, all inquiries are welcome. Triflers may apply. Just don't be creepy. We will respond. Allie, where could they email us?
So for you non-creepers, you can email us at abouttime4tc@gmail.com. So that's ABOUTTIME, numeric 4, TC at gmail.com.
Damn, what a case.
What a fucking case.
We cannot wait to hear what you're thinking. I am literally going to be white knuckling my phone for any comments, emails, all of it. I have to know.
As you should. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next week. Don't forget to tell a friend. And if I take a look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh.